The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So this quiet night in which we're entering into our Zazen practice, listening to a Dharma talk, and all kinds of other things may be present in the mind right now. The Lojong teachings keep shifting us back and forth. They appear to say, do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. And that very saying of do this, don't do that, whips us up a little bit into a frenzy, if we're sincere about it, because we keep hearing instructions that we think we understand, and then, wait a minute, the very next moment, we're dragged over into another place where everything is upside down. And this is true not only of the Lojong teachings, it's true of our koan practice, it's true of our life here on retreat, and it's true of our everyday life. We start to settle, and then we're yanked away from our settledness. And in a way, this is a tremendous teaching about finding balance in the middle of chaos, because life is so chaotic and unpredictable. And the slogan we're going to look at tonight, number 30, part of point 6, the discipline of relationship, is don't be so predictable. So already we understand that life itself is not predictable. Things happen and we don't know why or how they happen, and we have to meet them as best we can. And sometimes that means that we get knocked down, and sometimes it means we stay upright and maybe a little bit too rigid and then get knocked down because we're too rigid. And then we explore all the other ways of being knocked down. And many of us discover over time that we get used to one particular style of meeting the world. This is our predictable style, the way that we've learned to cope with life that isn't predictable. I think that the little text we read earlier tonight from Lin Ji, Do Your Best, is really pointing us in a similar direction. He's talking about the three of the bodhisattvas that are very important in Zen practice, Manjushri and Samantabhadra and Avalokiteshvara, as being none other than ourselves, and an encouragement to welcome these energies, these energetic forces. Manjushri is the bodhisattva of wisdom and carries a sword that cuts through delusion. And Samantabhadra rides an elephant and is the bodhisattva of awakened activity, going forth and doing things in the world. And Avalokiteshvara, of course, is Kanon, Guanyin, the bodhisattva of compassion. So Lin Ji says that if you want to get to know Manjushri, you need to see that all of the activities, from first to last, that you engage in, that is the living Manjushri. And every time you shine with the light of non-discrimination, that's Samantabhadra. And every time you are free, your mind is freed, he says, from its own shackles, then you are Avalokiteshvara. And this is a pretty wonderful thing, to imagine what it would be like to be these bodhisattvas. But we keep getting pulled back again and again and again into our favorite coping mechanisms, our favorite ways of meeting the world, because they get so deeply wired into us that it's almost impossible to escape from them. We say in Zen practice that the job is not to escape from them, but to get to know them really, really well until they are seen for what they are, just ways that we've learned to cope And they're not really who we are. I told you earlier today that I worked on my first koan with my first teacher for 9 years. I said that as a way to encourage those of you who work on koans and feel like a few months is forever. There was something about this koan that really stayed with me. And I came up with all kinds of answers for it. The koan was simply, who am I? Or who is the master? Or who is your true face, your original face before your parents were born? A kind of a classic head splitter. One that is really impossible to answer conventionally. And I would go in doksan after doksan to my teacher, who kept saying, no, no, that's not it, that's not it. I don't think he ever said, you idiot. But he didn't have to, because I knew that I was an idiot, because I couldn't get the answer to this koan. And then one day, I suddenly had it. I saw exactly what I needed to do. And it actually had something to do with this teaching about don't be so predictable, that who I thought I was, this who am I, who's your original self, was not what it really was, that it was infinitely pliable, that who I was from moment to moment changed so deeply, and the coping mechanisms that I'd gotten used to, my particular ways of meeting the world, were not who I really was. And I suddenly saw that sometimes I was like this, and sometimes I was like that, and that the best way to demonstrate that to my teacher was to go in and hold up my hand and show him the palm of my hand and then the back of my hand. That was it. I was positive that that would do it. I was very proud of myself for having figured that one out. So Doksan came, and you know what it's like to wait for Doksan. I had a zillion Doksans before I went in to see him. And then he said, so, who are you? And I held up my hand with a little bit of, you know, arrogance, because I knew the answer. I was so excited. And I held it up, palm, and then back. And he didn't do anything, so I did it again a few times. And he said, right answer, wrong koan. And he rang his bell. And of course it was now a few more years until something happened where I stopped making up stuff and surprised myself. I learned how to become a little less predictable. And yet, I had these patterns so deeply in me of being predictable that it was very hard for me to escape. And I don't think I've escaped to this day. When I goof something up, and Zen, as I think most of you know by this time, gives us tremendous opportunities for goofing things up. We appear to set up all these barriers around correct behavior and forms and all this stuff. It's just impossible to do them all. There's no one can do it. I've never seen anybody, including great masters, ancient, crusty, old ones who appear to be just full of love and compassion and wisdom. They can't do it right either, because there is no right. There's no wrong. And I think the difference as we move along is that we can shake off those patterns. We can see through them just a little bit more quickly than we did when we first started. In other words, we can see through them. I was tormented as a teenager and a young woman by terrible self-loathing. I could give you a list of reasons why I should be hating myself. They were all pretty good reasons, having to do really not with me so much as the way that society looked at me. I found, since I've gotten older and talked to lots of people, that it's not unique to feel just like the worst person in the world. Not everybody feels that way, but I certainly, that was drilled into me as a young girl. I didn't look right, I didn't speak right, I didn't act right, I belonged to the wrong social class, I belonged to the wrong gender, I belonged to the wrong religion. Everything was wrong, 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 wrong. And yet somehow I survived all that and put up a nice front eventually by the time I got into my 30s, I had already started practicing Zen. And Zen was very helpful because I kept hearing that the person who I thought I was might not be the person that I was. And working on the who am I inquiry or koan was very helpful too, because it kept undoing all these ideas I had about myself. And yet, and I think you know this one too, as soon as I hit some obstacle, just even being tired or sick or being told by a boyfriend or girlfriend, I don't want to be with you anymore, that could send me spiraling back to that old pattern. Just amazing how quickly it happened. And after a number of decades, I think I started to see that that wasn't going to stop happening. But what needed to stop happening was that I needed to stop ignoring a whole bunch of things that happened in my life that did not feed that story. The reality was that I was picking and choosing things to remember, and I still do this, things to remember that keep my low self-esteem alive, vibrant and alive. The very things that that feed it are the things that I tend to pay attention to, and the things that tell me something completely different are the things that I ignore. And again, I've learned over the decades that this is human being stuff. We are wired to look for the negative, to look for the familiar, to look for the dangerous, and to ignore things that are peaceful and happy and positive, because they're not as useful in protecting us from harm, protecting us from predators. So we're always on the lookout for predators, and I think maybe some of you might know that feeling. It was a little while back, a former friend decided to read me the Riot Act. She had a long list of things that were wrong with me, and it was devastating to hear them. And at one point, though, it was unbelievable to me that that she could have been saving all this up. And I said, "Where is this coming from?" And she said, "Well, I'm a scientist, and I have been collecting data points." I remember mentioning this to David and a couple of other friends. You know, I can't believe this happened. I think she's right about me. And oh my God, she really hit the nail on the head over and over again. And they all said, "What about all the other data points? What about all the times when you've, you know, not been that way, been warm, kind, compassionate, wise, blah, 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 loving, a good friend? What about all those?" And I thought, "Oh, but that doesn't matter." And she had her list. It was horrible. Data points. So this is very much connected to being unpredictable, right? The predictable part is, oh yeah, I know who I am. I am like this. I am a person who, if you ever say the words to yourself or to another person, "I am a person who," and then fill in the blank, you know that you're in dangerous territory. Even earlier today when I talked about how much I love television, you know, "I am a person who loves television." Well, so that's a data point. But there's a lot more going on than just that, right? But we tend to focus in on just a few. Or, "I am a person," oh, for years I said this about myself, "I am a person who doesn't like to exercise." Now, in terms of data points, the last 15 years I've committed myself to a very rigorous exercise program for me, anyway, trying to do something physical every day, working out and walking and doing Pilates and yoga and all kinds of stuff like that. But still, my mind, rooted in the data points that I consider viable and predictable, are, "I am the person who doesn't like physical exercise." Or, you know, "I am a person," oh, for years, "I love coffee. I just love to drink coffee." And one day, I remember, I've told a couple of you this, I was sitting at the kitchen table having my morning cup of coffee and realized that, for one thing, I didn't like the taste of it. And for the other thing, every sip I started to get more and more anxious. And I looked at the cup and I thought, "I don't need this. This is crazy. It doesn't even taste good." I still love the smell of coffee. maybe. I am a person who loves the smell of coffee. I don't know. I think next time I'm gonna see if that's still true. These are the things we do to ourselves, these prisons we put ourselves in, these inescapable prisons, really, because they are the narrowest of data point lists. They are not who we really are. We are capable of recognizing our awakened nature. That is our Buddha nature. We are Buddhas, Bodhisattvas. We are Manjushri, wielding her wisdom sword. We are Avalokiteshvara, the embodiment of love and compassion. We are Samantabhadra, the great being who just moves through the world on that noble elephant, making a difference moment after moment in awakened activity. This is who we actually are. In order to own this part of our these parts of our personalities, we also have to expand our list. The list of data points has to expand infinitely. And ultimately, we have to say, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm capable of. No matter what I've done up until this point, and I could give you evidence of what a sad excuse for a human being I am. This is just a very, very narrow collection of selective memory. Now, I'm not talking about people who've murdered people and, you know, tortured people and all that sort of stuff, because there is a limit to, sometimes you collect data points and there are terrible things that we've done. And it's important to see, short of murder and rape and torture, the terrible things we've done, the ways that we've been cruel to ourselves and others, the ways we've maybe made errors in judgment that led to certain consequences. This is why we say the Gatha of Atonement regularly. We vow to atone for everything, everywhere we've gone wrong and caused harm. But this atonement goes backward in time endlessly to even before we were born, and it goes forward in time endlessly. There's no end to it. So it's more just, I did that thing. Can I really look into the next moment and maybe do something a little differently? And that, too, is being unpredictable. Maybe I don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. I can't remember who said it, but somebody said, maybe it was Einstein, that that's the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. Instead, the teachings of Lojong inspire us to get out of ourselves, to get out of our own way, to be surprising, to notice parts of ourselves and the world that are exceptions, and live into those things. I mean, why not? Why keep sticking to these self-punishing narratives that tell the same story again and again and again? Just the other day, I have to check email for running the retreat, just in case somebody says they're not going to make it because of a snowstorm, which does happen. And I saw a notice that Mary Oliver died, the wonderful poet who wrote so many inspiring poems about this very thing, about letting herself be surprised by life. One of her famous lines was, I want to be a bride to amazement. And the poem that David quoted, it feels like a few years ago, but I think it was just last week, The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice. And that poem ends, you knew what you had to do, and so you began, and you strode deeper and deeper into the world. This bravery, this courage to not get yanked back into the old patterns. This is a little bit what this Lojong slogan is inspiring us to do. Don't be so predictable. Enjoy a life that is amazing, that is not the same as the life that you just lived a few minutes ago. Wait and see. Look and listen. Be prepared not to do the same old stuff. Be prepared to be awake to everything that is possible for you as a human being. Who are you? Don't be so predictable. Thank you.